Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another Nolcast. Bud, it is, it's been quite a while. Great to be able to do one of these again. I know that you certainly had an extended period of time without power and still have yet to maybe get fully back up and running at the homestead, but appreciate you making time, and I know I'm happy, and certainly think the vast majority of our listener base is pleased that we're able to put one of these out again. So sorry for the prolonged break, but that's just the way that things go.
Yeah, man, happy to be back, and you know, happy to you know, say that my home was spared major damage and I didn't flood. So both those are good things, man. I was not wasn't real happy when they told us we had to evacuate on Saturday with the whole hey, Zone B storm surge going to be 5 to 10 or whatever it was, and it's like, okay, that's about triple what was previously forecast, so not not great. But yeah, made it out all right, and did a week without power, and tonight found out I got power back. No internet or cable yet, so probably going to be living at the coffee shop still. But back, man, and we finally got a little something to talk about.
Always excited to be able to get back and do one of these, buds. Want to start the podcast by thanking our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce. Three simple ingredients, one fantastic product. It's something that you and I both have thoroughly enjoyed, and we've been fortunate to be able to partner with them. This is our second year, and just encourage anybody to keep Louisiana Hot Sauce in mind, and want to thank all the support that we've received from our listenership and feedback, and always appreciated.
Absolutely, dude. It's a great product. We love working with them, and we know they send along their well wishes and support to everybody who was affected by Hurricane Irma, and we hope everybody will be getting on their feet very soon, just as we did. And you know, if you can get out there and help somebody, you know, try to do that, man. And meet your neighbors and do something to help somebody.
We have at least some football that we've been able to watch the past couple of weeks. Still desperately in need of a football of our own, and finally get to look forward to that coming this Saturday. But why don't we just kind of have a conversation as far as what we've seen from the college football landscape, particularly what we've seen from the ACC, and try to make sense of what we can from the first 3 weeks.
So I think this is where we go with this, and I'm glad we kind of both independently decided to do this tonight. But we now have a lot of sample set for almost every team out there, with the exception of the team, Ingram, that we cover. So let's talk first. And if you missed it, we already talked about where this team could go with James Blackman. I don't really have any differing opinions of that. I think we both agreed that this is probably worth like one additional loss over whatever you thought the team was going to be. Isn't that what we decided on last episode?
Yeah, I think I've officially kept my W's and L's at zero variance. But it's probably I think you said one loss. It's probably a safe bet to think that, hey, look, you lose your starting quarterback, it's probably going to make you suffer in one game that you might have otherwise not had to.
So NC State's coming up. We'll do a full preview, of course, on Wednesday or Thursday night, and have that out for our listeners to hit that up. Probably do it Wednesday night, because it's a noon game, so you want to give everybody the maximum amount of time to listen. Ingram, I got to tell you, I think this line just initially here is a little bit high, and I love FSU's defense, but 12 points with a true freshman quarterback against the defense in NC State that's very talented up front, a team that spreads the ball around a lot. What did that line surprise you when that came out?
A little bit. I'm surprised it's quite as high as it is. I do have to say, and NC State certainly should have won the first game of the year. Didn't necessarily have a beautiful game in game two, but I got a chance to watch them against Furman and was pretty unimpressed, to be honest with you. I mean, they still have the pieces that you and I thought they had coming into the year. They've got a strong defensive line and a solid above average linebacker core, but a lot of holes in that team. Now, obviously, that's not going to be a game where you get their largest amount of effort and focus and concentration, but I'll just put it this way. I haven't been particularly, certainly haven't been blown away, and I'll say there's a lot of NC State's game that I haven't been particularly impressed with from what I've seen so far from them this year.
Yeah, Ingram, I do think that NC State is better than people think. I think their defensive line is indeed very talented. I think they have pretty good quarterback play with Ryan Finley. I'm sure you're going to go here, but I agree their coaching is not necessarily the best at the head coach spot. We know that not everybody likes working for Dave Doran, but man, they held South Carolina to 36% success rate, to 4.5 yards a play. I mean, 6 yards a pass, 3.4 per run. That's really good, man. They lost that game essentially because they dropped a punt and because they allowed a kickoff return for touchdown on the first play of the game. I think on a down-to-down basis, they were a lot better team. And I think that they definitely have an opportunity here to beat Florida State. Now, I'm not going to pick them to beat Florida State, but I do believe this game could be tougher than some people are thinking after viewing their first three games. Now, I may be wrong. I mean, there may be some sort of it factor that this team is missing. You know, I think you do have to have some issues in order to, you know, they got down in that first 10 minutes against Marshall. They looked like garbage, and they stormed back and won it. But I think this is still a top 30 type team, you know, and I guess we'll have to see if they actually play like that, because I mean, you can be a top 30 team by the metrics but not put it together. But I don't know, man. This could be tricky.
Yeah. Well, it's a hard time to feel super confident about anything, because there's so much of kind of a lack of information that you want to make as much as you can from the information that you have, but you also don't want to jump too hard on, you know, focus too much or make too big of a deal out of the smaller things that you have. I have some real big questions. Is South Carolina even that good of a football team? And obviously nobody thought they were world beaters, but they didn't put on a performance last night that would make you feel any better if you're NC State to lose in that game either. Now, obviously they should have won that game, but there's just a whole lot of points of information out there yet to be given, and a lot of questions surrounding everybody. But you'll be a little more optimistic on NC State than I am, and that's not gonna hurt anybody. But we'll found out soon enough this weekend.
Well, I think that your point about them not putting it together yet is really well made. And maybe they don't put it together. Hopefully, the game they put it together in is not the first ever start for FSU true freshman James Blackman. A group, two teams that have put it together so far, who are coming up on the schedule, Wake Forest and Duke, dude, looking pretty good.
Yeah, I've been generally impressed with Duke. I made a small comment about them last podcast as well. Good. I mean, I love seeing what they're doing. They've certainly raised their standard of play so significantly over the past 5, 6, 7 years, and have become a above average team in the conference. And you know, that's a away game at Wallace Wade or whatever that stadium's now called. I don't think Florida State's ultimately going to not walk away with a win, but that may just be a little bit more of a challenge than we first thought at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, here's a stat for you. Did you know Wake Forest? I think I read this correctly, and I don't remember where I read it, but I'm going to guess Bill Connolly, so I'll cite him, and if I'm wrong, somebody will correct me. Wake Forest has already scored, or is on the way to scoring more points in their first four games than it did in all of last year or all of Clawson's first year.
Wow.
That's incredible.
It's a hell of a stat.
I mean, yeah, they played Presbyterian, but they scored 51. They beat the crap out of Boston College 34-10 on the road. They really just housed Utah State. The Utah State team is not great, but they're an FBS team. You know, they're the type of team that Wake Forest just doesn't do that to. You know, and now look, I'm still very confident that Florida State will beat Wake Forest, obviously, because I just don't believe physically that Wake Forest can block FSU, right? I mean, this has been the scenario for the past, I mean, when was the last time they lost to Wake Forest? 2011? And even then, they struggled to block FSU that year. FSU's offense was just an absolute train wreck. It's been a while since Wake Forest could actually block
it. The ball happened to slide around on the field every once in a while during a measurement, too.
It did, yeah.
It was a wild, wild day, that game. Yeah.
Yeah, that was
that was the low point. That was the real low point, I would say.
Oh, God. That was back when Telvin Smith really was just running around, quote-unquote, making plays, but wasn't really playing within the confines of the defense. And they did a good job to exploit that day as well, if I recall.
Well, they had all kinds of things, but the ball moving during a measurement, even the touchdown, there's a touchdown, or maybe it's not a touchdown, it's a long pass that EJ throws, and then all of a sudden a holding flag falls out. That's just a strange game when I look back at it. Just one of those games that makes you go, that's sure a lot of curious things going on.
It just fell out.
Very strange. It just fell out. Yeah, yeah. And the guy, when he's that was just an error in form. Ultimately, that was the response from the conference.
It was a technique error, Ingram.
Technique
error. The late Doug Rhodes.
Yes. Yeah.
I believe said it, and really nice guy. That sucks what happened to him.
Yeah.
So Duke took care of Baylor, crushed Northwestern, crushed North Carolina Central. Man, Duke can score. They really can put up points on people. Now, their defense, I still don't think, is all that good. I think Florida State can probably push them around still. But the reason why I included these two in here, I think, is these are not just absolute, like, 99% gimme games. You know, they're probably more in that, like, 90% range. And that means you do have to game plan for them a little bit. You can't just take your entire week of practice and say, okay, we're going to take and rep nothing but Miami during Wake Forest week. You know, that's not really how you're able to do it. It's not like you're playing Delaware State. Those are our teams, and they're taking care of business in the non-conference. I got to give them that. You know, they're handling stuff and not embarrassing the league. Duke getting some good wins for the ACC.
Damn, if that game wasn't what it looked like it would be when it was first scheduled. I mean, if you remember 3 or 4 years ago and we hear that that Duke has scheduled Baylor, you're like, that's a large chunk to bite off, Duke. But funny how that played out anyway.
It is quite funny. Yeah, I was like, don't do that, please.
Two other teams on the schedule, Bud. Clemson and Louisville. Give our thoughts as to what we can take away from last night and maybe have a little bit of a counter as to some of the popular opinion that I see floating around a lot regarding Clemson in particular right now.
Yeah, okay, so I think the first thing you have to take away with is that, look, Louisville, and I wrote about this some today on SB Nation, Louisville really needed Lamar Jackson to be Superman because their supporting cast is just not that good. You know, they are missing some of the more important guys that they had last year, and they're also missing one of their better corners. But on offense in particular, I don't think their receivers did a decorative job getting separation against Clemson, and when they did, Jackson kind of struggled to get him the ball accurately, and they also struggled with some drops, and they needed him to be awesome. And even on plays when he wasn't pressured, he did struggle in that game and didn't play all that well. And I still think he's an awesome player. I still think he's the best player in the conference and the best quarterback in the conference, but he had an off night. Now, that may not be like a repeatable thing. Like, Florida State can't just assume that the guy will have an off night, especially because he had like one of the all-time on days last year against them. But that was their real chance to beat Clemson, was if he lit him up, and that just didn't happen. And I think in some ways, we learned two things, right? We learned up front that Clemson's offensive line is pretty good, but we also learned Louisville's defensive line is not really full of difference makers, and they were not impressive. They got pushed around early and often.
They did. I think not necessarily things we learned, but things we were reminded of. I mean, Brent Venables is just an incredible defense coordinator, and the fact that Clemson's been able to retain that guy for as long as they have, and ultimately somebody's going to have to offer that guy a pretty enticing head coaching job at some time, or Clemson is well on their way to continuing to be able to play at an incredibly high level of success when you have a defensive mind and able to pair him with Dabo's recruiting and some of the flexibility that he gives his people on offense. So what Venables did to Petrino, I was blown away with. Clemson has a high level of talent everywhere. I mean, those linebackers, they lost a lot of kids there. Obviously, Boulware is going to jump out to people's memory, but the linebacking core is as good, maybe if not better, than it was last year, in my opinion. Clemson is just a deep, talented team, and I'm always the first one to gush about their defensive line, and damn if you don't get reminded as to how talented that team is and the program they've built as a whole.
Yeah, they've done a great job there.
Having said all that, I'm not sure they're quite as good as people's making them out to be.
I agree.
I give Clemson more compliments than probably anybody else, and I really admire what they've done with the program. I think people are making too much out of one game, personally. And there's a lot of things to like there. There's a lot of things to admire what they've done. But I think in week 2, week 3, we're so eager to try to make sense of everything that we probably jump ahead of ourselves. And I think people may be doing that with Clemson.
This is the team that, let's back up just 1 week. Just 1 week. Their defense played lights out against Auburn. And, I mean, like, amazingly so. But Auburn so far, Ingram, did you happen to catch the score of that Auburn-Mercer game?
Mercer, fellas. Yeah, what was that, a 14-point game, 17-point game?
24-10, yeah. Not the best. Now, Auburn did move the ball against Mercer, but then again, it's also Mercer. I think they had 8 of their 12 drives not end in points against Mercer. That's not really very good. I'm not sure how good Auburn's offense is. I think that's a call that I made this year that I was really wrong on, thinking Jarrett Stidham would be better in that offense that he's been. Look, I think Auburn's defense is very good, and Auburn's defense went into Clemson, and they held Clemson to 4.2 yards per play. Now, Clemson did kind of shut it down a little bit in the second half, but still, Clemson's running backs didn't do a damn thing against Auburn. Clemson's offensive line actually, for the most part, looked pretty overwhelmed against Auburn. So while you think Clemson has a good offensive line, I don't necessarily think it's like the most amazing offensive line in the world. It's not that it's not like that 08 Oklahoma line or one of those Nebraska lines. I think it's a good line, but they definitely can be beaten up front, and they're doing a very good job coaching wise, in my opinion, and maybe you disagree with this, of giving Kelly Bryant what he can handle, and what he can handle is throwing a lot of passes, you know, behind the line of scrimmage, and then chucking it deep a little bit, usually when they have one-on-one coverage, or yesterday they had some guys schemed open on some double moves, and he did, for the most part, a good job of hitting him in stride. But those are things you can get away with against, you know, teams that are bad or average or maybe a little bit above average. If you're playing a really good defense like Auburn or Clemson or Florida State, that's harder to do. You know, he had 185 passing yards against Auburn, and really not on all that many attempts. I mean, you know, 31 attempts, 185 yards, that's 6 yards an attempt. That's really not very good. It's not the worst thing in the world, but it's not necessarily impressive. And I do want to see, you know, how well he spreads the ball around when he has to, because in this game, he did a great job. In the previous game, he tried to throw a lot of balls to Deion Kane, which, hey, if I had Deion Kane on my team, I probably would too. So I still want to see a little more out of Kelly Bryant before I agree with some of the takes on Twitter that are comparing him to Deshaun Watson. I don't think that's accurate. Deshaun was a lot better than he was.
Yeah, and I mean, that's nice that kid said he was going to be better than him on Twitter, everything else. They're doing a good job of bringing him along. He's a dangerous, certainly dangerous with the ball tucked underneath his arm. But, you know, Clemson, there's a lot of time for Florida State fans to be able to break this team down and decide ultimately what Clemson's going to be. Don't jump ahead of yourselves into making them out to be a world beater or necessarily the second best team or the best team in college football quite yet. Still a lot of things to see and try to glean from everybody before Florida State fans go and convince themselves as to quite how good that team is. But momentarily pause here to thank our friends at For the Table Restaurant Group. Been with us since day one. Unfortunately, this is day of recording, so we won't be able to do anything for September, but we'll just continue to plant the seed that when it's the 17th of the month, it is Reuben Day, and want to continue to remind people of that. Go ahead and mark October 17th on your calendar. It's something they've been doing since they opened their doors, and it's as good a sandwich as you can find in Tallahassee. And also, look, everybody's been a little football deprived and football starved, and just want to remind everyone that if you're not actually going to the game this weekend, or even if you are, there's no better place than any of the 3 locations down there in the shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium, and want to remind people that Madison Social has become kind of a second Doak to many people, and it's a great opportunity to take in all of what Saturday offers, and we are very, very fortunate to be able to pair with all of the restaurants associated with For the Table Group, and lucky to be able to have Madison Social by our side since day one.
They are kind of the OG sponsors, if you will, and the weather is just getting nicer in Tallahassee. Great porch weather. Grab a beer, sit outside, take in the sights, eat some great food. Madison Social, Central, and Township. And hey, as far as Reuben Day, it's important to get organized on this. There's a couple great ways you can remember this. Number one, you can follow them on Twitter. at Madison Social, us just doing that, or maybe Instagram, or both. You could also, if you wanted to, go into Google Calendar and just make a recurring notification that maybe 72 hours, maybe 48 hours before the 17th of every month, and say, hey, it's Reuben Day coming up. And then you remember to go there. You don't have to wait for a Nolcast to know Reuben Day is coming up, although we will remind you typically.
We will do our civic duty and do it. But a good little reminder is not going to hurt anybody, and a great idea, bud.
Okay, so who is the best team in college football?
It's a good question, man. I got to say, there were some things in the Colorado State-Alabama game that didn't blow me away necessarily with what Alabama did. I mean, look, that's not necessarily an Alabama team that's fully focused and on their game, and probably a little lackluster at times. But still, that offensive line didn't play the way that I thought it did. Struggled picking up third and one, stuff like that throughout the game at times. But it's hard to be absolutely certain as to who's number one. Oklahoma would certainly probably need to be in that conversation as well.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man, I've not been... Like, I'm very impressed with what Clemson did back-to-back Auburn and Louisville, right? Because I think those are at least good teams, right? And you beat Clemson, or you beat Auburn, and you go on the road, and you convincingly stomped out Louisville. I think if I had to vote, I would probably put Clemson number one right now. But at the same time, I don't think this Clemson team is as good as last year's. I don't really think it's all that close to being as good as last year's. I think Deshaun was a big, big deal, especially down the stretch and come playoff time. Now, maybe Kelly Bryant gets there. I kind of doubt it, in his first year starting. Alabama's been kind of up and down, but I'm not sure they get challenged in the SEC. USC, they almost lost the game. They got taken to overtime by a true freshman quarterback at Texas, Sam Ellinger, who, by the way, Florida State was in on and tried to get, but just didn't happen. And I'm not really surprised that they've gone to him. We'll see if they stick with him, but I do believe he's a better fit for that Texas offense than Shane Buechele, just because he's a lot... If you see him in person, and I've seen both these guys in person without pads on, just, in Under Armour type gear, Buechele is a much smaller kid frame-wise than Ellinger is. By the way, Ellinger, great sense of humor. Or maybe this wasn't a joke, but he told us in a video interview that his game was a combination of Cam Newton and Drew Brees.
That's right. I remember
Seriously.
You saying that.
Yeah.
I remember you saying that. Yeah, that is quite the hybrid to come up with. I love it.
I'm like, and by that you mean just Drew Brees, because you are a 6 foot flat white kid, and you're not that fast. Okay.
That sounds like there's a lot of Cam Newton in that kid's game. I imagine
a lot of Cam Newton. Yes,
a lot of Cam Newton.
So I don't really know. I mean, Ohio State clearly no. Oklahoma has probably the most impressive win on the year. I think going to Ohio State, like you said, Michigan. Michigan looked great against Florida for a lot of it, but then the last 2 weeks they really kind of screwed around, and that could be a segue, Ingram.
Yeah, to one of the more beautiful games of college football that's been played recently, real masterpiece. Damn! Anybody that missed the Florida Tennessee game, I'm either congratulations or I'm really sorry for you, depending on your point of view and the way that you consume and value a college football experience.
So I got to tell you, we got done with lunch because I had been running some errands, doing Home Depot, grabbing a bunch of stuff, and I had to stake up all my hedges because they had gotten laid down with the hurricane. And my buddy was like, I'm going to watch the Florida game. And I was like, okay, I'm probably going to do that. And then my other buddy was like, I'm going to see if we can go play nine holes. And I was like, okay, let me see what I want to do here. Do I want to watch the first half of Florida, or do I want... And we found a course that was fairly dry, And so we went out there and we played nine, and I had my, the score app, so it dings every time something happens in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so quiet because, they weren't doing anything. And I actually found myself checking it even when it wasn't pinging because there was just nothing going on. And so we had a couple pops there at the course and come back. And I kind of called the shot here in the living room of Sean Farrell's place. I wasn't hammered or anything, but I was like, hey, he can throw this all the way to the end zone. He's got a huge arm. Franks does. And 3 seconds later, good throw. Good catch. That's
Good coaching, too. Yes. I like the way that Tennessee was set up for that play.
So, you know, that's out of a timeout.
Yeah, I do know that's out of a timeout. Just look at that and look at the number of players that they have devoted to playing the first 15 to 20 yards of the field and wonder how you're coaching anything other than middle school football. Now, that's real, you know, Monday morning quarterback type of comment to make, but what in the hell are you doing setting up like that?
Right. So, okay, let's just go over real quickly for the listeners at home. There's 9 seconds left in the game, right? Tennessee has had several injuries in the secondary, so I will give them that bit of credit, but they're coming out of a timeout. Florida has one timeout left. The game is tied at this point, right? So there is a chance that Florida, who has a kicker with maybe the biggest leg in college football, if they get the ball to like the 40 or the 35, because the ball's on their own 37 right now, if they get the ball to like the 35, they're going to have a shot at a 52-yarder, but that's still not a great chance. What you said is a great point. I think they're either playing cover two or some kind of cover six, you know, or some quarter-quarter half type deal. And they have, what is it, 3 guys defending like the first 15 yards, which you don't really need to do because I'm pretty sure Florida's kicker is not going to kick a 67.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like that. Absolutely. That's like having a rim protector with 2 seconds left in a basketball game when you're up by 3. Don't really need that, right? I need everybody on the 3-point line. So the 2 areas you really got to defend are the area like 25 to 35 yards downfield, because that's probably where they're going to try to throw the ball if they're going to try to set up the field goal. And then you need some more people probably back on like the 15 so they can backpedal into the end zone, right, and be ready to defend any kind of ball that comes down. I don't really need anybody as far as, you know, non-pass rushers within about 15 yards of the line of scrimmage there. It's just there's no point. Now, Tennessee did employ the QB spy, right?
That was good. That's a good idea.
Felipe Franks.
Last thing you want is that kid getting loose and maybe picking up 14 yards and running the game out. That would be horrible.
Right, exactly. Okay, so that's an issue. Butch Jones said they were a nickel because they don't have a dime package because of how many injuries they have. Hmm. Okay, but I'm pretty sure they have some big receivers, and I know this because I have actually seen who they've signed, so I know they got some height in that team. If I'm running this, I'm okay with the coverage they played. I'm not really okay with the alignment that they played. They should have had their guys further back on the first level, which I think actually, Ingram, and if you follow me here, see if this is good radio or not, but if you have your first level of defense, your backers back more, then you have less space behind them, and thus I think the second level guys, like your safeties, their eyes are not drawn quite so much to all that open space in front of them, so they're not sucked up so bad. They can focus their attention more on their assignment, which is assuredly here the deep ball. I would probably have taken one of those linebackers off the field and put a like 6'4" receiver just on the goal line, you know, and said, okay, here's the deal. Bat down a pass. You know, if you see this coming, bat it down. So that was probably a mistake. Also, not pass interfering when it's just a 15-yard penalty in college football, also a mistake.
That's the thing that every college, like, if you're uncomfortable in any situation like this, just tackle the guy. Just throw him to the ground.
That's half of Clemson's game plan, and was most of Will Muschamp's game plan when he was their coordinator at Florida. I mean, they just grabbed everybody.
Right. Yeah. If you get beat, just tackle him.
That was bad.
And that's certainly applicable in the past. You know, last 10 seconds of a half or a game, there's no reason to worry about, I don't know. It just needs to be drilled into kids more as far as what you can do and how little of a penalty that comes with pass interference at the college game.
Well, okay, and then number 3 is, if you're in a situation like that and you have to be clock aware, and I get that there's some backups in the game and their best safety wasn't in the game because he was hurt and he's going to miss, I think, the rest of the season or whatever. Once he starts to scramble, the only real assignment at that point that matters is the deep ball, okay? If you're a DB and you're playing some kind of zone coverage, which I think they were, and you see that guy start to scramble, I don't need you to come up to cover the receiver who's on the 20. Just stay in the end zone or just start taking off for the end zone, because at that point, he's wasting so much time scrambling around. I mean, he wastes about 3 seconds in the pocket. And then he wastes about another, I think when he lets the ball go, there's, 3 seconds left in the game? And it hangs up for a good long while. That has to be a situationally aware thing to where, okay, if you're in a, what I'm going to call a two play situation, where if there's enough time to get off two plays from, you know, Hail Mary type distance, or potentially, you know, maybe hit a field goal type distance, once the guy starts to scramble, unless his name is Lamar Jackson, you probably should just take off to the end zone and get back there. But a multitude of errors for Tennessee. Florida does deserve credit for taking advantage of those errors. The joke of the night, and I actually had a little snot bubble come through my nose on this. Did you see the guy who tweeted at Butch Jones?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did not.
I got to find this. This is amazing, dude. You watched the whole game, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and we don't need to spend our whole time going down, but the whole if you're a Tennessee fan and all the frustration that comes with your alignment at the last play of the game is only brought to a crescendo by a litany of just incredibly questionable play calling, particularly on the offense. Like, yeah. Refusal to run the ball, trying to throw it 6 out of 7 times inside the 10 at one point?
Yeah.
Just okay. Madness, absolute madness.
This guy tweeted this last night at 10 o'clock, and he has he only has 700 followers, so not a lot of followers. He already has 1,200 retweets and 2,600 likes, so you know it's pretty fire. He tweets, at Coach Jones, I am standing roughly 1 yard away from my wife. Should I reach out and hand her the remote, or should I throw it at her 3 times? Hashtag go Vols. I'm just howling, dude. Wow, is that good? I mean, that's if you didn't watch the game, the best player in this game was named Kelly. He is Tennessee's running back. He was gashing Florida pretty good. Got him all the way down there, and then Tennessee chucked the ball off the goal line 4 times or 3 times or whatever. Didn't bother to actually just turn around and hand the ball at all, which is not perhaps the best idea, given the fact that Tennessee's quarterback is not that good. But there are some other takeaways here I have, Ingram, as well. You know, Jim McElwain is 14-3 in the SEC so far through his first 17 regular season SEC games. That's pretty damn good.
That's crazy. It's crazy to think how much it's also a reflection upon how absolute crap the SEC East is. But, yeah, that's wild to think about what he's been able to do inside the conference. In the regular season, anyway.
All right, look, I know people don't like him, and I get that. But that kind of record buys you essentially the luxury of keeping your job for at least an extra year and being able to say, okay, we're going to make a change at a coordinator, right? You don't get to fire the head coach if he's 14-3 in league play. That's especially not when the league is the SEC. And I totally agree with you. It has been down. I think we're seeing some signs from Florida's offense that it's actually improving, though. Despite some of the just incompetent-looking stuff going on, I think Felipe Franks is better than any quarterback they've had in a while. They're doing this without their best receiver and without their best running back. Franks, I don't think, was absolutely terrible. He's improving some. But Ingram, there's a thing here that I've been noticing, and it's a trend, and I know we talked about this as well. I might have mentioned this last week or 2 weeks ago whenever we last podcasted. Did you happen to see the numbers I dug up on the running backs against Florida's defense so far this year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Those are scary if you're a Florida fan.
It's interesting. I mean, it's something we've talked about as far as the loss of talent or some of the talent that was put there by South Carolina's current head coach. And the type of defense that Shannon coaches, that's kind of his, not necessarily method of operating, but that's not uncommon to find a defense that struggles against the run. So
71 carries for 411 yards by running back so far, and not necessarily teams that are all that good running teams. Like, I don't think Michigan has that great of a run game, and neither does Tennessee, really. That's 5.8 yards a carry to running back so far. This was kind of an issue down the stretch last year, too, you know, but they were facing some guys named Dalvin Cook and Bo Scarborough and whatnot. It's gotten worse, and I do like some of the young talent on this defense. They are running out of Will Muschamp's players. I like some of their guys in the secondary, like Quincy Wilson and C.J. Henderson, and I like T.J. Slayton up front a whole lot. I think he's a real special talent, but man, I don't think Florida's linebackers are all that good. When I watch them, their whole defense is just constantly out of their gaps. They don't look all that well coached up front, and they don't look all that physical up front. It looks like a lot of guys trying to run around and make plays, but they're look, I know defense is a collective individual effort, but there's some stuff there that's going on. If you watch that, I think that's going to continue to be a problem. And the only limiting factor to that defense that's not really playing together as a team could be the fact that a lot of these offenses in the SEC are just, you know, garbage. And they may not be able to exploit it. But one team that I do think will run the ball pretty well resides in Tallahassee. And what I don't think will happen, I don't think Florida's defensive depth is going to get a whole lot better over the course of the season. So this could be a very good opportunity for Florida State to continue its rushing success against the Gators in the Swamp.
Something we'll be able to continue to keep an eye on. But again, as we just try to make sense of what's out there and try to figure out exactly what Florida State's list of opponents are going to look like, that is something that both of us had kind of mentioned over the weekend. So, but maybe a recruiting note or two, and we'll put a wrap on it.
Yeah. Okay. So we have Jalen Waddle, the receiver out of Bel Air Episcopal High School, which is Marvin Wilson. His high school, Marvin Wilson, of course, defensive tackle, who signed with Florida State last year, five-star. Waddle released a top six tonight of Texas A&M, for some reason. Texas, TCU, Oregon, Alabama, and Florida State. Of those, I think five of the six will have the same head coach next year, and one of them is named Texas A&M. Or one of the schools that's not going to have that is probably named Texas A&M, because I think he is very fired at some point. Main competition here, I actually don't know. I think that he has a legitimate like for several of these schools, and it's going to depend on how much room they have and how quickly he wants to make his decision. I do think he's a special player, but I'm not sure he's a guy that every team on this list will hold a spot for signing day. We saw photos that Justin Fields showed up to Georgia for their game against Samford that has some Georgia fans believing that he is a lock to go to Georgia now. I don't know that that matters all that much. Certainly, visiting Florida State was not an option here because Florida State's game was canceled due to Hurricane Irma. Obviously, we hope that all our listeners are safe and sound from that. And maybe they'll be able to get Fields down again before he decides to commit, and he has not listed a commitment date yet. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's not going to be imminent, but I think he's probably a kid who would announce a date. So that's kind of your very quick recruiting update.
I talked with the best person that I know here in Atlanta about the field situation tonight, and I don't think that that's – I wouldn't pay too much attention to a particular visit like that. The kid's just playing the game. I mean, one night he'll wear Auburn stuff under his jersey for a game. It just don't make too much a decision as to where that kid's going to go because of a picture you see of him attending a school. Dude just knows what he's doing. He went and saw – LSU a couple weeks ago. He's well versed at how to play this recruiting process, and to that end, I still think Florida State's in a really good place to sign him.
And look, man, did you do your own lottery in high school?
Yeah, no, I did not. I did not.
I did some of mine. Like my mom started to make me do some. Man, you know what I wore in high school as an undershirt? Whatever I had, like remotely clean. Like, you know, I feel like sometimes we do read into this stuff a little bit too much. Like, he may be playing the game on what he's wearing. I'll give that to you. But he might just also be like, hey, this is on the top of my drawer. Cool, my mom did my laundry. I'm going to grab this shirt and wear it underneath my pads because, you know, just because whatever, I guess. He is a freak, though. He's really good.
Oh, he's had a hell of a beginning of the year. Yeah, certainly hasn't given anybody any ammunition to label him just like a summertime camp sensation. It's translated into Friday nights as well.
Exactly. He's going out there and proving some stuff for sure.
All right, bud. Great to be able to get together. I mean, this is one of our shorter pods, but just wanted to have something out for people. It had been a while. We will do a more game-specific preview later on in the week, really look more at a micro level as to what NC State is and what Saturday at noon might look like. But just wanted to be able to touch base, put out a Nullcast, be able to be supported by our sponsors and fans, and hopefully this is something that people will enjoy and know that we will jump back into a pretty regular schedule here, fingers crossed.
Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to back to this thing, and we'll definitely be jumping back in.
This concludes this episode of the Nullcast. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, write us at thenullcast@gmail.com, or tweet us at Nullcast. It's great to be back in the saddle with y'all. Be looking forward to the NC State preview coming up this week and the instant reaction after the game. Today's date is September 18th, 2017. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.